Before we start, I'd like to give a massive shout out to the following people for supporting Stories Telling Stories on Patreon: Jim Ross, Holly, Tamara, Tom, and Maddie. Thank you so much for your support. If you'd like to help support the show and hear your name listed before future episodes, head on over to patreon.com/storiestellingstories. Having been a fan of comic book stories for as long as I can remember, being alive for the rise and supremacy of Marvel at the box office has been an absolute dream. Seeing childhood heroes brought to life outside of cartoons, without the campy suits and low budgets of previous attempts, is something I never thought I would see. These films crossed barriers and brought people together from all walks of life. Young and old, geek and noob, men and women. It was a good time to be a comic book fan. Until you looked out at the assembling Avengers and realized that it was a whole lot of white people being the selfless, reckless, and sometimes careless heroes. When Marvel announced that there would be a Black Panther movie, I was excited at everything that the series could bring to the MCU. Beyond introducing Wakanda and classic comic book storylines that could now be told, I was eager to see what the introduction would do for a global audience that so far has had little in the way of representation in the universe. And I recall a great deal of backlash on social media. Oh, they're just trying to be woke. Oh, there goes the MCU. Ugh, this will probably be Marvel's Catwoman. And other ridiculous and short-sighted statements seemingly set on sinking this script before it could be shot to celluloid. And coming off the heels of Phase 2, it was fair to be critical at this stage of the MCU, as a few stumbles had been had. Thor 2 and Iron Man 2, to name a few. But if they could get this right, it had the potential to be something special. But even my optimism couldn't have foreseen a billion-dollar blockbuster arising from the origin story of a lesser-known and controversial character so far removed from the existing formula. And the series was made better for it. The fans were made better for it. And an entire race of people was given a gift. I can't personally relate to or understand some of the heritage and the tradition that Black Panther displayed, but I can certainly appreciate it. And I know that it's incredibly important that Black people of all ages are able to see something like this. It was not made for me. And I'm perfectly fine with that. And I still thoroughly enjoyed it. And I think it's one of the best films out of that whole phase of the MCU. Thanks in no small part to the excellent casting choice of Chadwick Boseman as T'Challa. Losing a hero is never easy. And I've lost several from my point of privilege as a mostly white man in America. I'm fortunate in that I've got countless icons in every medium in which to draw inspiration. But losing Chadwick Boseman to such a debilitating disease, one in which he struggled so privately, yet continued to put out tremendous work, is unfathomable. 4 years of a fight against stage 3 colon cancer, all while filming and working and struggling in silence, with only a small circle of trusted people who knew the truth. A circle who deserve commendation in their own right for respecting his wishes and keeping to his wishes to not divulge his condition to anybody. He wanted to be strong for his community. He wanted little kids to have a hero in his work, to show them the true meaning of being a leader and what you could grow up to be. You weren't just a king for comic book people. You were a king for your people, for all people who have ever struggled to find a fair and powerful representation of themselves on screen. And before we dive into this week's story, an account on the death of Socrates, written by Plato, as one last homage to a humble and brilliant man, I'd like to share a few of his own words from a commencement speech he made at Howard University in 2018. To give hope and inspiration to the small but global audience that enjoys this podcast. This is for you, Chadwick. Rest in power. Wakanda forever. Purpose crosses disciplines. Purpose is an essential element of you. It is the reason you are on this planet at this particular time in history. Your very existence is wrapped up in the things you are here to fulfill. Whatever you choose for a career path, remember, the struggles along the way are only meant to shape you for your purpose. When I dared to challenge the system that would relegate us to victims and stereotypes with no clear historical backgrounds, no hopes or talents, when I questioned that method of portrayal, a different path opened up for me. The path to my destiny. When God has something for you, it doesn't matter who stands against it. God will move someone that's holding you back away from the door and put someone there who will open it for you if it's meant for you. I don't know what your future is, but if you are willing to take the harder way, the more complicated one, the one with more failures at first than successes, the one that has ultimately proven to have more meaning, more victory, more glory, then you will not regret it. Now is your time. The light of new realizations shines on you today. Chadwick Boseman, 2018. Plato's account of Socrates' death. From the Phaedo. 115b through 118b. The character Phaedo is narrating the account of Socrates' death.
"Nothing new, Christo," said Socrates. "Just what I'm always telling you. If you look after yourselves, whatever you do will please me and mine and you too, even if you don't agree with me now. On the other hand, if you neglect yourselves and fail to follow the line of life as I have laid it down both now and in the past, however fervently you agree with me now, it will do no good at all."
"We shall try our best to do as you say," said Christo. "But how shall we bury you?"
"Any way you like," replied Socrates. "That is, if you can catch me and I don't slip through your fingers."
He laughed gently as he spoke, and turning to us went on.
"I can't persuade, Christo, that I am this Socrates here who is talking to you now and marshaling all the arguments. He thinks that I am the one whom he will see presently lying dead, and he asks how he is to bury me. As for my long and elaborate explanation that when I have drunk the poison, I shall remain with you no longer, but depart to a state of heavenly happiness. This attempt to console both of you and myself seems to be wasted on him. You must give an assurance to Christo for me, the opposite of the one which he gave to the court which tried me. He undertook that I should stay, but you must assure him that when I am dead, I shall not stay, but depart and be gone. That will help Christo to bear it more easily and keep him from being distressed on my account when he sees my body being burned or buried as if something dreadful were happening to me, or from saying at the funeral that this is Socrates whom he is laying out or carrying to the grave or burying. Believe me, my dear friend Christo, Misstatements are not merely jarring in their immediate context. They also have a bad effect upon the soul. No, you must keep your spirits and say that it is only my body that you are burying. And you can bury it as you please, in whatever way you think is most proper. With these words, he got up and went into another room to bathe, and Christo went after him, but told us to wait. So we waited, discussing and reviewing what had been said, or else dwelling upon the greatness of the calamity which had befallen us. For we felt just as though we were losing a father, and should be orphans for the rest of our lives. Meanwhile, when Socrates had taken his bath, his children were brought to see him. He had two little sons and one big boy, and the women of his household, you know, arrived. He talked to them in Christo's presence and gave them directions about carrying out his wishes. Then he told the women and children to go away and came back himself to join us. It was now nearly sunset because he had spent a long time inside. He came and sat down, fresh from the bath, and he had only been talking for a few minutes when the prison officer came in and walked up to him.
"Socrates," he said, "at any rate, I shall not have to find fault with you, as I do with others, for getting angry at me and cursing when I tell them to drink the poison, carrying out government orders. I have come to know during this time that you are the most noble and the gentlest and the bravest of all the men that have ever come here. And now especially, I am sure that you are not angry with me, but with them, because you know who are responsible. So now, you know what I've come to say. Goodbye, and try to bear what must be as easily as you can."
As he spoke, he burst into tears, and turning around, went away. Socrates looked up to him and said,
"Goodbye to you too. We will do as you say."
Then, addressing us, he went on,
"What a charming person. All the time I've been here, he has visited me, and sometimes had discussions with me, and shown me the greatest kindness. And how generous of him now to shed tears for me at parting. But come, Christo, let us do as he says. Someone had better bring in the poison, if it is ready prepared. If not, tell the man to prepare it."
But surely, Socrates," said Christo, "the sun is still upon the mountains. It has not gone down yet. Besides, I know that in other cases people have dinner and enjoy their wine and sometimes the company of those whom they love long after they receive the warning, and only drink the poison quite late at night. No need to hurry. There's still plenty of time."
"It is natural that these people whom you speak should act in that way, Christo," said Socrates, "because they think they gain by it. And it is also natural that I should not, because I believe that I should gain nothing by drinking the poison a little later. I should only make myself ridiculous in my own eyes if I clung to life and hugged it when it has no more to offer. Come, do as I say, and don't make difficulties."
At this, Christo made a sign to his servants, who were standing nearby. The servant went out, and after spending a considerable time, returned with the man who was to administer the poison. He was carrying it, ready prepared, in a cup. When Socrates saw him, he said,
"Well, my good fellow, you understand these things. What ought I to do?"
"Just drink it,"
he said.
"And then walk around until you feel a weight in your legs, and then lie down. then it will act of its own accord.
As he spoke, he handed the cup to Socrates, who received it quite cheerfully, without a tremor, without any change of color or expression, and said, looking up under his brows with his usual steady gaze,
"What do you say about pouring a libation from this drink? Is it permitted or not?" "We only prepare what we regard as the normal dose, Socrates,"
he replied.
"I see," said Socrates. "But I suppose I am allowed, or rather bound, to pray the gods that my removal from this world to the other may be prosperous. This is my prayer, then, and I hope that it may be granted."
With these words, quite calmly, and with no sign of distaste, he drained the cup in one breath. Up till this moment, most of us had been fairly successful in keeping back our tears. But when he saw that he was drinking, that he had actually drunk it, we could do so no longer. In spite of myself, the tears came pouring out, so that I covered my face and wept brokenheartedly. Not for him, but for my own calamity in losing such a friend. Christo had given up even before me, and had gone out when he could not restrain his tears. But Apollodorus, who had never stopped crying even before, now broke out in such a storm of passionate weeping that it made everyone in the room break down, except Socrates himself, who said,
"Really, my friends, what a way to behave. Why, that was my main reason for sending away the women, to prevent this sort of disturbance. Because I am told that one should make one's end in a tranquil frame of mind. Calm yourselves and try to be brave."
This made us feel ashamed, and we controlled our tears. Socrates walked about, and presently, saying that his legs were heavy, lay down on his back. That was what the man recommended. The man, he was the same one who had administered the poison, kept his hand upon Socrates, and after a little while examined his feet and legs, then pinched his foot hard and asked if he felt it. Socrates said no. Then he did the same to his legs, and moving gradually upward in this way, let us see that he was getting cold and numb. Presently, he felt him again, and said that when it reached the heart, Socrates would be gone. The coldness was spreading about as far as his waist when Socrates uncovered his face, for he had covered it up, and said, they were his last words,
"Christo, we ought to offer a cock to Asclepius. See to it, and don't forget."
"No, it shall be done," said Christo. "Are you sure there's nothing else?" Socrates made no reply to this question, but after a little while he stirred. And when the man uncovered his eyes, they were fixed. When Christo saw this, he closed the mouth and eyes. Such was the end of our comrade, who was, we may fairly say, of all those whom we knew in our time, the bravest, and also the wisest, and the most upright man. The end.
Locked in a Vacancy is produced in collaboration with Stories Telling Stories and STS Media Group, socially isolating itself at Milt House Studios in Milton, Vermont, casting around the globe to your frontal lobe wherever podcasts are found. Locked in a Vacancy is also streaming on YouTube at Stories Telling Stories. Make sure to give us a review wherever you stream our show. We really appreciate it. Make sure to follow us on Facebook and Instagram. give us a subscribe on YouTube, and consider supporting us on Patreon for as little as $1 a month. And until next time, stay sane, stay safe, and stay whimsical.